The message you are about to hear is brought to you by Art Bradick. And now, Mr. Bradick.
Let's go over to 2 Corinthians 6. Hope everybody is having a great Sabbath so far today. You know, all of us have put our trust in Jesus Christ as our Savior. But I don't think that there isn't a one of us that doesn't have times in our lives where we sin, and that sin repeats itself, and it brings us down. And, you know, we'll promise God that we're not going to do it again. We'll be sincere. We'll really want that, but then we'll go along so long, and then we'll fail. We will, learn the lesson of Lot. Whenever this happens, God's people are engulfed in problems, I think, at the end of the age today. There's problems in their marriage, there's problems with health, there's problems at work, personal problems, and there is a struggle just sometimes to make ends meet. We're making so much more money, but we seem to have expenses that are beyond our means sometimes. And what's happened to me as I've watched over the last decade is we have slowly but surely kind of moved into a bad attitude. That is, we have a spiritual apathy that has been affecting many of our people. There's an anonymous quote that I read this week that I want you to think about. The quote says, "Press forward, do not stop, do not linger in your journey, but strive for the mark set before you." Doesn't that sound just like Paul? Remember? "I haven't attained, but I leave everything behind and I press forward towards the mark of the calling of Jesus Christ." So it doesn't matter what happened last week, and it doesn't matter what happened last year, and it doesn't matter what happened yesterday or the last 5 minutes. You understand? All that matters is going forward towards that kingdom. That's all that matters. You know, we must not let anything stop us in this calling that we have. Nothing must even slow us down. And that's what's happened. We've been slowed down. And we can't let anything take precedence over our seeking of the kingdom of God. So here we are living between the time of our calling and the coming of the kingdom. We're right sandwiched in between that. And our calling demands that we step over a line and stay there permanently, God's side of that line. We've got to become a new people. We've got to change our carnal values to God's values, and we've got to live those values to the very best of our ability, to put them to use and strive not to vary from them. This is our calling. But there's a tendency among every single one of us, and that is to be drawn into the world. And there are pulls in that world, and they do affect us. They have enormous pressure on us. Robert Moorhead wrote what I think was a brief statement, and he entitled it, "The Fellowship of the Unashamed." And I just don't think it could be put any better. He says, "I am a part of the fellowship of the unashamed. The die has been cast. I have stepped over the line. The decision has been made. I'm a disciple of his. I won't look back, let up, slow down, back away, or be still. My past is redeemed. My present makes sense. My future is secure. No more walking by sight. No more small planning. No more smooth knees, colorless dreams, and tamed visions. No more mundane talk. No more cheap living. There's no longer need for preeminence, prosperity, or position. I don't want promotion, plaudits, or popularity. I don't have to be right. I don't have to be first. I do not need to be recognized, praised, regarded, or rewarded. I now live by faith. I lean on his presence, and I walk by his patience. I live by prayer and labor by his strength. My face is set. My gate is fast, and my goal is the kingdom. My road is now narrow. My way is rough. My companions few. I know my guide is reliable, and my mission is absolutely clear. I can't be bought, compromised, detoured, or lured away. I won't be turned back, deluded, or delayed. I will not flinch in the face of sacrifice. I will not hesitate in the presence of the adversary. I won't negotiate at the table of the enemy. I won't be pondering what to do at the pool of popularity. I won't spend my life living in the maze of mediocrity. I won't give up, shut up, or let up until I've stood up, until I've prayed up, till I've paid up, and preached up for Christ. I am a disciple of Jesus, and I must go on until he comes. I must work until I drop, communicate all I know, and when he comes for his own, my manner of life is going to be clear. Wouldn't that be great if we lived like that? What a wonderful attitude to have. And I think it should convince all of us to pick that direction. Unfortunately, that's not happening with most of the people of God as we move in toward the end of the age. And this is why God gives us a warning like we find in 2 Corinthians 6. And there in verse 17, he says, this is it. This is what we've got to do now. Wherefore, come out from among them and be separate, says the Lord. Don't touch the unclean thing, and I will receive you. So we remember that the scriptures tell us we're to be in the world, but not a part of the world. That means we don't identify with it. We're not invested in it. We are to be strangers and pilgrims in this life, and we are just passing through. We're not going to become invested in this world and its values and its standards and its play and all the rest of it. It's not that we can't enjoy life from time to time. That's not what I'm getting at, you know. What I am getting at is we're not going to get stuck in it. We're not going to make it our number one goal. The kingdom has got to be our number one goal, no matter what it is we do. You know, and I think the biggest problem we face is that the world offers us certain rewards. There is a pleasure in sin. Remember how it talked about Moses, how he forsook the pleasures of sin for Christ. And there is a pleasure to sin. And human nature and sin are like mesh gears. They work together so well. They're perfect fit, if you will. And so there is a pleasure in it. So Hebrews 11, but every Sabbath, God wants us to be reminded of something of enormous importance. And it's this. There is something so much better than what this world offers. And so Moses got it. He saw that, and he forsook the pleasures for doing righteousness. Hebrews 11:26 continues the thought where he says, or it says, he esteemed the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. For he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. Think of what he's saying. The reproach for Christ's sake is better than winning the lottery. Nobody thinks like that, really. But that's the real truth. Being reproached for Christ's sake is better than any riches. If you think of the ultimate reward, because it's so much greater than anything we could imagine here on earth. And the greatest thing that you could imagine on earth is going to be swept away and forgotten because of the greatness that the kingdom's going to give to us. And so this is how Moses felt, and he left us an example in his life. Now, over the last decade, I've been watching carefully the movement of the church, and more church members have moved towards what I call the edge of the world. They're not stuck in the world. They're not just a part of it, going along with it wholly, but they're on the edge, you know, and they're sort of in a little bit sometimes and out a little bit sometimes. And the problem with that is the tendency is never to get more out. The tendency is always to get more in. And that's what my fear is. The problem we find ourselves in today is that there are so many things in the world that are allurements. They allure us. They pull on us. Pleasures pull on us. And as time passes, our conscience can become sort of seared so that the potential evil that is in some of the things in the world doesn't seem to affect us. It doesn't sicken us. It doesn't turn us off because we've gotten used to it. That's the way life is. That's how people live. And so it's not abnormal to indulge in some of these things, you know. But I ask today, is that really the attitude that a Christian should have? If you're a real Christian, should we have that kind of attitude and think we can dance on the edge of this world's way? You know, abuse for avoiding the pleasures of sin is something that we don't see much of. And it's not too unusual when you think of it because we were born into sin, we grew up in sin, we lived sin, and we had plenty of sins, you know. And further, we live in Egypt today, when you think about it, that all of the pleasures they had of the delicacies and the food and the sexual pleasures and all of the things they have as far as objects to worship, that's everywhere in the world that we're in today. You know, I watch the people in Walmart, you know, they don't see it the way I do. I'm going, it's just idolatry, you know. They want this so bad, you know. They want that so bad, you know. And so they get it and it works for about a year. But look, we also have past memories. And these are the things that get me. The life I lived before I was called, I got files in my head. And it's filled with all those memories of those things that were pleasures that were sin. And so we have to struggle against this. I'm just trying to make a case for this is not easy, what I'm asking. It's not easy what the Bible is asking us to do. It is very difficult, you know. So those things are still pulling on us. They're still pulling on us. And I say that human nature is dialed into the world. It is a match. That's physical. We're physical. And those pleasures that are there are very, very tempting. And so my point is today we have to recognize this and actively resist. There's a tendency to be allured to things that are not good for us. And you know, just for example, it's really funny to me, but I have this manageable fear of heights. You know, went up in a hot air balloon. I'm thinking, you know, which cable could possibly break and what do I do if it does? You know, I go to a cliff, you know, and they'll have a railing, you know, and I'm glad they have that railing because I go to a cliff and look down and, you know, I feel pulled in that direction. You know, I just never have, you know, I'm afraid of it. But why does it have that effect of pulling me? But it's just like sin has that effect. You know, you look at it and it kind of is attractive and it kind of has a pull on us. And I read this story about horses. And it was interesting to me to see this same kind of thing that a horse in a fire, they say, will just paralyze. It doesn't know what to do. It doesn't know how to get away, even if there's an open way of escape. You have to blindfold that horse from the fire, and then you can lead it out. And sometimes I think we have to do that to ourselves. We have to mentally blindfold ourselves and say no to whatever it is. And I remember there's a case where this guy was trying to quit smoking, and he lived right next to a liquor store. And they used to sell cigarettes for like 25 cents a piece, you know, just single ones. And so he'd go to that liquor store and, you know, every second or third time he'd buy one, just one cigarette, you know. And he was talking to the minister, and the minister said, go to a different store. And he did that. And once he didn't have that in front of him all the time, then he was no longer pulled by it, and he was able to finally overcome. And we have to kind of take that approach, because there is glitz, there's glamour, there's very attractive things that pull on us in the world. I mean, you know, the violence in the movies today gets your heart racing and the adrenaline going. You get a rush. You know, you identify with the protagonists in these movies and you feel it. and you get a rush. You know, like it's being in a roller coaster sometimes as you have car crashes and races and stuff like that, and buildings blow up, you know. And so you get a kind of high from it. Dressing like the people in the world gives you a feeling of more like acceptance, and I'm part of it, you know. And the profits you can make in business if you play their game are phenomenal, you know. My son David told me, having come from L.A., he said that if you don't make $100,000 a year there, you're a loser. You know, there's all that money to be made. Just think of it. You know, just think of all that money and what you could do with all that money. You know, but that money's meaningless. They're going to be throwing their gold in the streets because there's not going to be anything to buy. We have to understand the time we're in, and we've got to make decisions based on our understanding of where we are. Such a myriad things to do in life, experiences to have, places to see. To me, it's all overwhelming in a way, and it has its effect on our Christianity. And this world, no question about it, it can be very enticing. It really can. So let's go to 2 John 2, if you will, 2 John 2. I want to move away from the pulls of this world right now. That's what I want to do. That's my goal, and this sermon is about that in one sense. 2 John 2. I want to move away from them. I want to isolate myself more from all these pulls. We know they're not good for us, 2 John 15, 2:15. Is that right? Can't possibly be right. Yeah, 1 John. So you can't trust computer programs all the time. Yeah, love not the world, chapter 2, verse 15. Neither the things that are in the world. If any man loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. So I would ask you, you know, how far can you take this? I mean, you can have hobbies, you can have things that you really love to do, and so on, and they can consume most of our thoughts. You know, I watched Judy, who's been very ill, and all her thoughts revolve around her illness. And that can happen to us when we're sick, and it's normal, but I'm just saying that the same principle is at work with every other aspect of life. If we get into something, have you ever seen guys that race cars, race motorcycles, guys that have hobbies like that? They get into it so deep that all their money goes into it, all their time goes into it. We can't afford it. I remember in the liberal era years ago, and we had a minister that got up in the and gave a sermon, and he said, you know, people in the world, you know, it says that we're the weak of the world, but we don't have to be the weak of the world. We can be great singers. We can have talent. We can be in movies. We can have all kinds of things that they have. The next guy came along and said, you know, basically, you know, only if you give yourself to that. Now, I took drumming lessons from a guy, and he drummed 6 hours a day, and then played 6 hours a night. And then he went all around the world learning the various kinds of beats that they have in Africa and in Cuba and in South America. And he spent his whole life involved in that. And that's what people will do. But we've got to spend our whole life involved with one single goal. And we've got to do everything we do. Everything we do and every thought we think should be directed towards that, just like other people are towards their hobbies. But this is no hobby. And this has real, real rewards at the end of it. So anyway, all of that that's in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the world. And I will suggest to you every single time we sin, it's one of these. It's one of those three categories that we fit in. And here's his point. The world passes away and the lust of it. But he that does the will of God is going to abide forever. All of this goes away eventually. All of it. And our relationships with one another and our relationships with God and the family of God are all that are going to be most important for the rest of all eternity. Plus, at his right hand, there are pleasures forevermore, more than we could ever dream of. So let's go to Genesis 13. I want to talk about this, and I know I've kind of wandered around here getting to it, but I want to talk about Lot, the lesson of Lot, because it's so valuable, I think, for us to understand it and to see it even working in our own lives. We know the things that we should avoid. We know it. It's not like we need to be told again what the Ten Commandments are. We don't need to be told over and over again that the pagan holidays are not good, you know. But the point is, there's things we know we should avoid. And we think in our mind, you know, yes, I'm going to overcome them. And usually it's someday, but it's always in the future. And my point is that what we do is we know we've got some things we need to change. But we linger. We wait on it. And because of that, in many cases, it never gets done. It never gets tackled. It never gets overcome. And that's my point today through this great man, Lot. You know, if we don't put overcoming our sins and problems up front in our lives and be serious about it, we'll get trapped. We'll get trapped by it. And I want us to consider the example of Lot and Abraham when they prospered, Genesis 13 and verse 5. Genesis 13 and verse 5, and Lot also went with Abram and had flocks and herds and tents, and the land was not able to bear them that they might dwell together, for their substance was so great that they could not dwell together. Can you imagine this? That they had so much cattle that everybody was having trouble determining what cattle belonged to who because they just had so many. Your memory doesn't take you through this. And so there was strife between the herdsmen of Abraham's cattle and the herdsmen of Lot's cattle, and the Canaanite and the Perizzite dwell in the land at that time. And so the two men began to prosper when God took them to the promised land. And it was so difficult for their herdsmen to tell the cattle apart, and they're fighting, arguing over it. And in verse 8, and Abraham said unto Lot, let there be no strife, I pray you, between me and you, between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we're brethren. Is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself, I pray thee, from me. And if you'll take the left hand, then I'll go to the right. And if you depart to the right hand, I'll go to the left. And Lot lifted his eyes, and he beheld the plain of Jordan, and that it was very well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as you come into Zoar. And so Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves, the one from the other. Now, can you see that Abraham's example is a good one for us? Let the other guy choose, even if he chooses the best and you don't get the best, because we will get the best in the end. We will be blessed by God for taking that kind of approach. Now look, what approach did Lot take? Wow, look at how well watered that is over there. Look at how I could really, my herbs will really grow over there. I'll get wealthy. I'll get rich. And that's what so many people are doing today. Career means so much to us. And the people, and that's why, you know, when the guy gave the sermon and said, why can't we be like these other guys? Well, because you have to put your whole life into it, you know. People that make money in companies and corporations and rise to the top spend their whole life there, you know. They give their life to the company. And that's how they do it. But I'm saying let's give our lives to Christ. That's what we should be doing. And so Lot chose the plain of Jordan and journeyed east, and they separated themselves from one another. And Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain and pitched his tent toward Sodom. He didn't have a problem. He knew what Sodom was like. He kind of liked city life, you see. So he's moving over in that direction. And the point I want to make here is in 2 Peter 2. So let's go over there for a minute. 2 Peter 2 says something interesting. I often thought about this and wondered, how could this be, you know? But you have to kind of consider the times, I think, and so on. 2 Peter and chapter 2, that you can see that Lot was acting materialistically. You can see that he was becoming invested in the world and what he could get and what he could have. And but with the world came wickedness. Wickedness comes with the world. 2 Peter 2 and verse 7. 2 Peter 2 and verse 7. And God delivered just Lot, and vexed with the filthy conversations of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them, and seeing and hearing, vexed his righteous soul from day to day with their unlawful deeds. Man, I lived in Hollywood. You know, I mean, there are prostitutes walking up and down the street. There's dope being sold all over the place, you know. And can you imagine living in that kind of environment all the time? And you just be going, God, it's disgusting, you know. This is horrible. And you see people laying on the street. When I go into L.A., some were dead with blood around them, and others were just passed out from being drugged to death, you know. So the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations and reserve the unjust unto the day of judgment to be punished, but chiefly them that walk after the flesh in the lust of uncleanness and despise government. Presumptuous are they, self-willed. They're not afraid to speak evil of dignities. And we've got ministers all over the place now that do this. They speak evil of Mr. Armstrong, and they're not afraid to speak up and mock and ridicule our government rulers when God says, don't do that, you know. But we do it because we think we're smarter, better, and we can judge and so on. But God says, don't do it. And so what we want to do is not do it. Genesis 19, if we'll go back there, back to Genesis. Lot became more and more wealthy as time went on, and he became very, very prosperous over time. And eventually he actually moved from outside where he pitched towards Sodom. He moved into Sodom. He liked what was in there. He still knew God's way. And so he hated what he saw all the time, and he hated what he heard, and he hated their pride, and he was vexed by it. That is, he was irritated and upset by it every day. But notice how the world that he was in had changed him. So Christ had visited Abraham with two angels and told him what he was going to do to Sodom, and Abraham pleaded with him, you know, if there's one righteous man in there, would you save the city, you know? But the two angels went into Sodom, and Christ did not go. I think it's important to realize that. And there came two angels into Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom, and Lot, seeing them, rose up to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground. You know, so Lot didn't just move into Sodom. He became one of their respected men. Those people that stood at the gate were the people that had wealth and didn't have to work. They had other people working for them to make money, and they didn't have to work, but they were the wealthy people, and they were the ones that were considered the wisest, and people went there to counsel with them, and sometimes they had them make judgments. He had become so much a part of this society, you see. You just move a little closer, and then a little closer, and then pretty soon you're in it. Right smack dab in it. And so I want us to see how it moved him, how it changed him. So with the knowledge of God's law behind him, you can imagine why people would want to counsel with him, because he knew what the answers. This would work best for you. You know, like talk show hosts, you know, that know the Bible. If they don't use the Bible and just give the principle, they are really good. Remember that lady that's on, she's a rabbi or something on in L.A.? Yeah, Dr. Laura. She has the answers most of the time, you know, because she studied the Bible, just the Old Testament, like it says. That's all you really need for salvation, the Old Testament. So anyway, I think she's read the New Testament, but she studied the Old. And so anyway, he moved to Sodom, sat at the gate, and the knowledge of God's law helped him in that regard. And when these two angels came in, I'm sure he recognized that their dress, their mannerisms were such that he realized these were important men, probably well-off men, and certainly wholesome men, and he didn't have anything to fear from them. And so Lot did what was custom of his day, and that is he invited them in and was hospitable toward them. Genesis 19:2, and he said, "Behold now, my lords, turn in, I pray you, into your servant's house and tarry all night, and wash your feet, and you'll rise up early and go your ways." And they said, "Nah, no, we're going to abide in the street tonight. We want to see what it's like here." And he pressed upon them greatly, and they turned unto him and entered into his house, and he made them a feast and did bake unleavened bread, and they did eat. And so the men of the city came into came to Lot's house, and they wanted these men, and so he tried to talk them out of it, and finally the angels had to blind them so that they couldn't find his door, and they were helpless for a time. And then the angels asked him, "Do you have any other relatives here?" You know, and he said, "Yeah, he had a couple of son-in-laws." And so he said, "Go and tell them we're going to destroy the city." And there's a point that's interesting to me, that what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah was done by angels. It wasn't God. Think of the power the angels have. And God has so much more power than they have. Anyway, I want to notice a couple things here, that these sons-in-law were not part of those who were rioting at his house. They were not blinded. Also notice that the daughters still lived with Lot. That means they were not married yet. They were espoused, which is as good as being married, but they still lived in separate quarters. So anyway, Lot tries to warn these guys, and they think he's mocking. Now, can you imagine if you knew what was going to happen? And, you know, I mean, all of us, I think we first learn the truth. Those of us that aren't born in the church and stuff, when we come into the truth, we go, our eyes are open, we want to tell everybody, and they mock. They just think you're an absolute lunatic, you know, because it's so different from everything they've ever heard. And these guys did that, you know. Can you imagine? What, are you nuts? You crazy? What happened to you, man? You're slipping, you know. So he returns home, and he sleeps that night. And verse 15 through 17, "And when the morning arose, then the angels hastened Lot, saying, 'Arise, take your wife and your two daughters, which are here, lest you be consumed in the iniquity of the city.' And while he lingered," you know, in all honesty, I remember that his wife looked back and was turned into salt. It wasn't until this week that I realized that Lot lingered. And I had to put the sermon together to let you know Lot lingered. He was being urged by these angels. I mean, avidly urged. And he didn't make a move. He did not want to leave either. This was his wealth. This was his home. This was everything he knew. And he did not want to leave it. So while he lingered, the men laid hold on their hand, and upon the hand of his wife, and upon the hand of his two daughters, and the Lord being merciful unto him, and they brought him forth and set him outside the city. And so at that point, the angel told him, "Okay, you're on your own now." And he said, "Escape for your life. Look not behind you, neither stay you in the plain. Escape to the mountain, lest you be consumed." So think about this one more time. Lot's wife, looked back, was turned into a pillar of salt. And we seldom notice that these angels were strongly urging Lot and that he was hesitating. He lingered at this time and was reluctant to leave the world and his wealth behind. So they had to forcibly take him by hand, set him outside the city, and then they told him to run, to escape. And this is my message today. Lot lingered. That's the message. I know it took a long time to get there. But look, Lot knew God wasn't going to lie. Those angels were telling him the truth. He knew everything was going to be destroyed. Still, he lingered. He was so attached to Sodom. He was so invested in it. It was the source of his wealth. It was the world that he lived in. It was the world he knew. It was the jargon and the language that he understood. When push came to shove, he didn't want to leave it. So he hesitated. And the angel showed him mercy, and he showed his family mercy, and they took them out. And there's an amazing parallel for us here today. You know, the Protestants teach something, and that is this. You can't be righteous. You will sin, is what they say. And so there's no reason to need to try to keep the Ten Commandments. They teach that you can't be righteous and you can't be holy and you can't be all these things. They believe in holiness. They believe in righteousness. They read books about it and they talk about it, but they don't think they have a need to attempt it. And if you think that hasn't affected the Church of God, I would really argue against it with you, because I see the Church of God slipping more and more into that. And you remember, we went and I heard a sermon at a church you attended before where they were saying, you know, God just forgave David. He never said a word about all the things he suffered. It was just the whole idea is we're God's people, and because of that, we're special, and God's going to forgive us. So we don't have to fight. We don't have to work hard at overcoming. Nothing could be further from the truth. We are carnal to the core, and we have to work to become more like God is. We have to do something. This whole thing has affected the Church of God to a certain degree. You know, people have come to a point where they dread making sacrifices to do the right thing. They avoid self-denial to do what's right. They want to widen the gate just a little bit. We don't have to be so tight, uptight all the time. Let's just have a little wider gate, you know, a little broader way, just a little bit, and, you know, to keep up with the world, you know. And this was what the problem was in the early church, you know, that the people were saying, you know, these guys here are, you know, the Gnostics came in and they had all these doctrines and stuff, and the world was moving in that direction, and so they were trying to appeal to them, and so they began to kind of change over time until God says, you know, I might just take your lampstand completely away, you know? And that's what happens if we get too accepting of the world and too accepting of its way. And so today people find what I think are ingenious ways to avoid being separate and holy in this world. They make excuses for their marginal behavior, rationalize questionable amusements that they and entertainments that they use, and many times they maintain friendships with people that are on a whole nother level that are in the world. But yet these people are God's people, but they are too easy to excuse their behaviors, and they haven't seen this fact. We have to wholeheartedly step on the other side of that line and stay on the other side of that line. We've got to be committed to that. That isn't just our hobby. This is our lifetime goal. This is all that matters in our lives. Matthew 26. When it's said and done, when it's all over, this is all that really matters in our lives. Matthew 26. You know, there's so many people today that I've seen in the world that become sophisticated. They work in corporations, and they, in order to have their job, they hang out with some of the people that are their superiors and stuff like that, but it all rubs off on us, you know. It may benefit their bank account in the end, but it does damage to our holy character. And eventually it translates into what our character is. And I see the people of God are no longer adamant about fighting the sin that so easily besets us. You know, we allow it to remain. As one person said, it becomes an undisturbed tenet in our hearts that way. We don't even think about it. Just what we do, you know. We hesitate. We linger from making a full frontal attack on sin. You know, I've heard so many rationalizations before. You know, hey, it's my natural temperament. Why, even my grandparents were like I am, you know. We've got excuses for everything, if you think about it, you know. It's the way we were treated by my parents. My parents were bad people, you know. They didn't raise me right, you know. But you see them next year, and what are they like? Same as they were the year before. They are not making the changes, you know. And one thing I read, I thought it was kind of interesting. He said, why? Why is this happening? And he said, because these people are brothers and sisters a lot. You know, their issue is lingering, you know. You know, perhaps at one time we ran a pretty good race. You know, perhaps at one time we were zealous. And I know they mock Mr. Armstrong and they say he was always in the gun lap, you know. Now we need to be in the gun lap and we're letting down more than ever. You know, we ran a good race at one time, but after a while, you know, 10 years goes by, 15 years, 20 years, and some people are saying, well, what's in it for us? What am I getting out of this? Worldly speaking, you understand? They're not thinking about I'm getting character of God, and they're not prizing that. They're not prizing his law. They're not prizing the changes they're making in their character. They're looking at, what do I get out of it, you know? And they're complaining. I went to a ministerial conference, and the guy saying, one of the ministers saying, yeah, I've tithed all these years, and what did it get me? I went to Ambassador College. You know, the old days, they had to change the rods on their car to be able to put them together so they could get to the feast. I'm over here at the Ambassador College, and these kids are driving Porsches, you know? They've got so much. God has blessed us so much, and we have so much. I don't know where they get off. But you can't make the things we have that important. And that's what television does, and that's what advertising is all about. That's why people take sociology. As my friend once said to me, don't worry, Art, when I was complaining about the way life was, he says, we'll make you think it's just fine. We'll design something that'll make you think you're ahead of the game here, you know. So anyway, that's my point. So I think in some cases we become more like Peter, is what I want to say today, that Peter followed Christ. But in Matthew 26 and 58, he said, he followed him afar off to the priest's palace. Do you get that? I want to be too close. I don't want to get in trouble. I don't want to be too close. And so he followed Christ from afar. But are we doing that today? Are we in touch? We're part of the church. We know the doctrines. And we're following him. But we keep our distance. We don't really want to be like him or go through what he went through. We want to live fairly comfortably. You know, Matthew 24, we've got to follow Christ. And here's a warning. He says to us, we are the ones he's talking about. This is the time that we're living in. Matthew 24 4 and verse 43. But know this. If the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched. He wouldn't have suffered his house to be broken up. Therefore, be you also ready. For in such an hour as you think not, the Son of Man comes. Who then is that faithful and wise servant whom his Lord has made ruler over his household to give them meat in due season? Where is that person? You know, blessed is that servant who his Lord, when he comes, shall find so doing. He's going to find some so doing, isn't he? Yeah. But he's going to find some not doing. That's the point. Let's be on the doing side of this. Let's make it a priority. Truly I say unto you that he shall make him ruler over all his goods. But if that evil servant shall say in his heart, my Lord delays his coming, and begin to smite his fellow servants, and eat and drink with the drunken, the Lord of that servant shall come in a day when he looks not for him, in an hour that he's not aware of. And he's going to cut him asunder and appoint him a portion with the hypocrites. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Why is he going to appoint them a portion with the hypocrites? They're hypocrites. They say, but they don't do. That's why they have that portion there, you know? And so he's going to do that, and they're going to have a weeping and gnashing of teeth. It's going to be devastating to find out. Now, my question to you is, how far away is this verse? There's a time it's talking about. How far away is this? Now. It's right now, and the ministers are beating each other up. They're attacking each other and trying to make themselves look good while the other guy looks bad. And what else are they doing? They're eating and drinking with the drunken, and I know that can mean that they're just eating and having a good time and they're in the world, but I suggest that it's more than that, because who are the drunken of this world? Those that have partaken of the wine, of the fornication, of the whore. And people have to keep a big, deep, dark line between them and us. We got to get on that side of the line and stay on that side of the line. Because anybody who has had anything to do with her is not going to be in the 144,000. That's what it says. Defile themselves with women. Well, what women? You know, the whore and all her daughters, you know. So my point is, look, it's talking to us about right now. And I ask you to look at the state of China. Some say, the newspaper today said, it's going to fall, it's going to collapse. Look at the state of Europe. Look at the state of Iran. And look around. It's the end of America as we knew it. You know, it's eroding away. I'm watching it erode away like the sand on the seashore, a bit at a time, a bit at a time. You know the times we're living in. And the economies of nations are shaking. Empires are all in flux. This is what it was like before World War I. This is what it was like before World War II. And this is what it's like now. Everything's in flux. It's all moving around, and people are making allies with who they're making allies with, you know. And there is going to come World War III. Look around and see it in the church, as we just read. And look around and see it in the events of the world. Watch so that you may be, and pray that you may be accounted worthy to escape these things. And this is right exactly where we are. So I want us to look at the history of Lot. I want to burn it in our heads somewhere. Consider his lingering. Are we lingering in dealing with any of the things that we need to be dealing with? Are we kind of forgetting them, hesitating? Are we kind of putting them off and lingering in giving them the attention they deserve and really working on it? It was July, and it was 1976, and most of you, I think, remember this. The Israeli commandos made an amazing raid in Entebbe. It was very daring. They were at the airport in Uganda. There was 103 Jewish hostages on this plane, 103 of them, and there were seven men with guns holding them hostage. The Israelis came up. They drove up as fast as they could, and the general there had a loudspeaker, and he spoke in Hebrew, and he said, drop to the floor, drop to the floor, crawl, lay down. And so everybody that was Jewish laid down, and the guys came in and they just shot everybody standing. And it was an amazing thing. It was just amazing. It's in all the history books. It's just amazing. But here's the problem. Two hostages hesitated. They were shot too, because they were still standing. They lingered. They didn't just drop. When they heard that in Hebrew, they should have just dropped to the ground, laid on the floor. But they hesitated, and they died for it. And that's my point today. See, if Lot wouldn't have had the mercy of the angels, if he wouldn't have had the close relationship with Abraham, his lingering would have ended in what? Being burned up in the fire. Well, it's the same thing with us. Our lingering could end up with us burning in the fire, Revelation 3. You know we're living in a unique era of time. You know that. Most people have read the book on eras, and they know what's what. You know, it's not like we don't really know a lot of this. We're in the era of Laodicea, and that word's Leo is people, and the other Sia is judge. So it's people who judge or people fit for judgment. But the point is that everybody's deciding for themselves now. They're not patiently keeping God's word. They're not holding fast to it. They're making their own decisions how this should work and how that should work and what they are responsible for and what they're not. This is the world we're living in right now, and it's spreading, and it's affecting people, and I want to put a stop to it to any degree I can. And so I'm giving this sermon, okay? Don't forget Lot. He lingered. Let's not linger with those things we know we need to overcome. Let's do something about one of them. Pick one and start working on it seriously. That's what I'm saying to do, you know? Patiently strive. You know what patient means? It means that you're being steadfast under pressure to do otherwise. And there's a lot of that going on today in those restaurants and the rest of it. So what happens is the people of God are lingering and they're thinking it's okay. And the reason we should not linger is the enormous cost. Revelation 3 and verse 14. Revelation 3 and verse 14. And to the angel of the church of the Laodiceans write, these things says the Amen, the faithful and true witness. And that word witness means martyr. So I'm sure he's talking to people who are going to be martyrs and think there's something for it. The beginning of the creation of God. I know your works, that you're neither cold nor hot. I wish that you were cold or hot. Perhaps we were hot once. Perhaps we were turned on, zealous for God's way. We wanted to practice it. We wanted to pray. We wanted to study, and we wanted to fast when we needed to, you know. But this has all been going on for so long, and then the ministry failed us, you know, which I apologize for being one of them, you know. We're human too, but we still, they failed us when we thought they were somebody special and wouldn't. And then the church has split, and then it split, and then it split, and then it split until there's 400 different groups out there right now calling themselves Church of God. You think this doesn't have an effect on our zeal? But the reason is we have our eyes on the church. The church is Sodom in a sense. I'm not trying to say that in a negative way. I want you to understand. I'm just saying the way Sodom was to Lot is the way the church is to a lot of people. Instead of being directly related to God and making your relationship with Him, too many people have made their relationship with how do I stand in the church, and that's a real problem. So anyway, we wanted to practice, pray, study, and fast, and it's gone on for so long, and we've had so much happen to us that a lot of people have just dulled down. We've just lost our edge. We've lost our passion. We've lost a lot of our zeal. And we're so close to the end. Recapture it. Work on it and recapture it. You might think we're doing fine because we have more money today. And we might be carrying that ancient Puritan doctrine that if I have a lot of money, it's because I worked hard and God blessed me because I'm righteous. You know, and it's, you can cheat and lie like we see so much corruption in the government and have money. It doesn't have any meaning, you know. And so anyway, we're blessed with all this stuff. And we now have something we've got to do. We've got to start really getting serious and taking action, because if not, a devastating fire is going to come. in verse 17, because you say I'm rich and increase with goods and have need of nothing, know you not that you're wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked? And I counsel you to buy of me gold that is character tried in the fire, that is trial, that you may be rich, in white raiment that you may be clothed, and that the shame of your nakedness does not appear, and anoint your eyes with eye salve that you may see. Why do you think he's telling us this? Because it's not set in stone. There's still chance to change. There's still a window of opportunity for these people that read this at the end to change. And so that's what he wants us to do. As many as I love, I rebuke and chasten, he says. Be zealous, therefore, and repent. Boy, this is so important. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. That's where we are right now. He's trying to get the attention of the church, and they are not paying attention. They're comfortable and contented where they are. If any man hears my voice and opens the door, I'll come into him. I'll sup with him, and he with me. And to him that overcomes, I'll grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame and am set down with my Father in his throne. He that has an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says to the churches. Do you hear it? Do you hear what he's saying? He's saying, repent. Don't let this attitude that we're surrounded with, this cloud of apathy and contentedness and I'm a good guy and I'm, you know, successful in the world or whatever, don't let that influence us to let go of a goal that is so much more important and so much more valuable. Don't let us get distracted so that we linger in changing what we need to change. Don't hesitate. Now's the time to look at yourself, and as we heard read today in the reading, examine yourselves. Look inside, and what is not like Christ in here? And I'm going to try to work on changing that. So let's hear Christ's warning to the Christians living in this age. If there's some things we need to clean up in our lives, let's work on those things and not linger any longer. And you can, and I can. We have the possibility of making it into his kingdom, but not just drifting in. We're going to have to work at it, you know. And his kingdom, he says, there are pleasures forevermore. Now, he's not talking about Six Flags Magic Mountain. You understand? He's talking about pleasures that are beyond the scope of anything you or I could ever imagine. Excitement and pleasures and planning and creativity beyond our tiny imaginations. That's the goal. That's the reward. And it's worth struggling for. And with God's help, if we want it, we can do it. We can have it. But we've got to remember this one thing. Don't linger. Move against sin.